Let's take a moment, shall we? Just to settle in. And a moment of silence, if we could, for those that are still suffering outside of the rooms. So, once again, my name is Paula. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. Hi, everyone. I have been coming to OA since in January. I'll be celebrating 10 years in the program. And it's just a testament of the power of God and the power of this program, how it works. I will tell you that my abstinent date was not the first day that I walked into these rooms. It was April 20th of 2008. And since then, I've been maintaining about a 50-pound weight loss, one day at a time. You should also know that I didn't get abstinent immediately once coming into these rooms. It took me about 2.5 years to completely surrender and accept the fact that I had a food problem, that I have what I describe as an eating disorder. And that was very hard for me to accept. It was very hard for me to even open myself up to the fact that I had a problem. But I came in, and part of my story, that is a very important part of my story, is I started eating around the age of 8, and it was because I was abused as a child between the ages of 8 and 12 by my grandfather. So if there's anybody out there that has ever been hurt as a child and abused as a child, don't feel alone. And I could tell you that there is life after trauma, and it could be a good life. And I've experienced that. And I'm here to tell you that through what I went through, and you know, the truth is that the food, and I say this all the time, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, that the food saved me in many ways during that time. It was a place for me to feel relief, and it was a place for me to feel some element of control that I didn't have. But it no longer serves its purpose, right, in my adult life. And but what's involved with that is healing. And examining the past, everything that the step work tells us to do. So the eating started around 8, and I remember my behaviors were this. Secret eating, I always ate alone. There was an element of control that I felt with that I wanted, you know. The relief came from the food. I was a nighttime eater. There was something about the sun went down, and it was like, everyone's going away, or everybody go away, so that I can do what I need to do. In fact, part of my definition of abstinence is I don't eat after a certain hour, no matter what. There's just something, it still triggers, I don't know, like that vampire thing, like, you know, the sun goes down and whoo! And so I just don't go there. I'm a grazer. I was a grazer. There was no meal that had a beginning, middle, and end. It was just the most unbelievable thing. It just went on and on all day, even as a child. And then into my adult life, the same thing. I remember there was no dignity in the way that I ate. I mean, you know, I would clear up the table. There'd be scraps. You might have, you know, a family member left something on the plate. It didn't go in the garbage. It went in my mouth. There was, you know, my children, my daughter. I have two children, and they're just wonderful. And I thank God for them every day. And you know, my daughter, you know, hits the ground as a toddler in the mouth, you know, like hand to mouth. It was just constant, like, I was like a garbage, you know, and it went on and on. I was the type of, I've heard people, my behaviors didn't drive to the fast food places to get my food. It was just whatever was in the house, which, by the way, was never enough. I don't, you know, I used to have these feelings. I'd open the fridge up and be like, oh my God, there's not enough food in here. Like, and it was just this sense of security that I felt. The more food that there was in the house, the more I felt control and safety, because that was what I lacked. I didn't have that, and I felt that the food brought the relief. The food brought the sense of control. So that's how it was for me. And so that went on for a long time. And every phase, and you know, the truth of the matter is it's a, I mean, it's a progressive disease. And I could tell you that the thinking was what was the most disastrous thing. It was just like from the minute I woke up in the morning, it wasn't anything other than what am I going to eat today and when? And how is it that I'm going to get what I want to get? Because I want it and I want it now. And it didn't matter who I had to get past or whatever the case might be, whether it was in my childhood years, in my, you know, college years, it just went on and on. So I'm going to tell you about my last binge. My last binge was April 19th of 2008. And this binge was very different from other binges. It was just true testament that this disease is progressive, right? Because it starts to manifest itself in different ways. The thinking starts changing. You think you've got something, you know, settled, and then your mind thinks of another way for you to get that fixed, you know, because I was always looking for that ease and comfort that it brought for me. And so one of the things that I had described was the fact that I ate in secrecy. I never binged in public, because the way that I was brought up, I am the daughter of an immigrant family. My parents were born in Sicily. My grandfather was born in Sicily. And we had what we call in Italian, like due facce. It was more, you know, you show the world one thing, and then you go home, and you just keep the rest to yourself. There's no, you know. And so I did that with my food, which was like just the most ridiculous thing, because how do people not, I mean, I'm 200 pounds and like people are just like, you know, like, oh no, she's not, I never see her eat, you know? And it was just, but that was how I lived. I peaked at 200. That was, yeah. 198 was what the scale said. I remember the day. So my eating progression that last day, my sister had had a bachelorette party and I was invited, and, it was an outing, you know, and I was in program, but I was in meetings. That was all I was doing. There was no working the steps at that point in time. And I wasn't willing to even accept that I had a problem. And, we ate dinner in a restaurant in public. There's lots of girls around, lots of, you know, girls from her party. And I saw something that I don't talk about often, that I believe triggered it to bring this level of binging to it was just a whole other level. And it was my cousin. Now, what had happened was, part of my story is that, you know, 35 years later, my story comes out in my family that I was abused as a child. And it also comes out that my cousin had been abused as a child. So there was two of us in the family. And it was very obvious, because if you looked at the both of us and the rest, we have a big family, we were the most overweight out of all of them. Everybody else were normal eaters. I don't come from a family of compulsive overeaters. Everybody eats normally. And when I mean that, I mean, you know, they eat when they're hungry, they stop when they're full. Like, I could look at my mother, and I swear to this day, like, and we're sitting there, and she, you know, she gets her something that I don't have, puts it on her plate, and just kind of nibbles. You know, like, I don't nibble. Like, I don't remember a time where I could just keep something, a square that I eat with a fork, and like, just, and then talk to you and be engaged. It's just, I'm like, I eat fast, I still do. Get it off the plate, and where's the next fix, you know? And she just sits there and sips her coffee. She nibbles. I can't nibble. And it just still baffles me to this day. I still look, and I'm like, yes, I'm me, and you are definitely you. But so the bachelorette party on April 19th was different, because my cousin came in, and my cousin is not in the program. And my cousin doesn't want to come here. And, you know, I pray for her tremendously. But the truth is that it's just not part of her story right now. And my cousin's 300 pounds. And my cousin came in and she was 300 pounds. And I saw myself in her that night. You know, I was around you. So it was all starting to come to me, you know, but I wasn't there yet. And in she walks. And honest to God, I just was so broken by this because I saw myself in her. And you know that expression, there by the grace of God go I. And that was exactly what happened. And so what I did was the cake came out. The rest of the girls are having fun with their drinks. I don't care much about liquor. And I sat at the end of the table and I ate that entire cake by myself. She comes and joins me later and helps me finish it off. And that was my last binge. And I left that restaurant. I went home. I consumed so much sugar. And I don't know if this had ever happened to you. I used to do this with a lot of takeout foods. They're so salty. Like, I would just go into this food coma and I would just, you know, drink tons of water. I remember the just thirst, because the sugar thirst of the salt, the intakes, right? And then just guzzle down and then fall asleep for 12 hours and wake up and just, and that morning was different from any other morning that I had done that. And I still, to this day, that is the power of God, because that morning was different. And I don't know what happened that night from that cake to the next morning, but something divine happened and it made me get up and I made a phone call and I found a sponsor and I said, I am done. And I say that with conviction because I was so done. I was done. I was willing to do anything that you had said, anything you wanted me to do, step work. I was there. I was surrendered on my knees. So, and you know, there's something to be said about the gift of desperation, right? There really is. And so I get a sponsor and, you know, the God thing is just not sitting right, you know? And because the truth of the matter is, I'll tell you at that point in time where I was with, you know, this higher power, I always believed in something greater than myself. I remember as a young child, I mean, my father really didn't kind of, you know, beat it into me, the whole religious thing, but I always prayed. I would even as a young child, please God help John, Saul, Patricia, mom and dad. Those are my brothers. I had this thing. Like, I always felt there was something, but I just never believed that God, that I deserved God's presence in my life. I just didn't believe that I, because of all the shame that I had experienced and I felt so less than, that I didn't believe that I had deserved God's presence. But I believe you all did. I just did believe it for myself. So so what happened was when I got that sponsor and I said, all right, what do you want me to do? Anything, you know, because I wasn't listening for 2.5 years. So you want me to open this up? Okay, where are we going? She says, meet me at a Panera on a Sunday. Leave the kids. I had, you know, my children were alive, you know, yeah, my son was alive at that point. And she opens up the book and she takes me right to the fourth step. She goes, she's very big book centric. She was cross addicted. She was an alcoholic. She was an overeater. She went right to the step work. She had me where she wanted me, completely and utterly. She takes out a notebook. She writes at the top resentments, makes these slashes down the line and says, who are you? Let's talk about what's going on and who you're angry about and why. And I never had, it was hard, like, because for me, I was afraid to open the floodgates. You know, it was kind of like, I was so angry at the world. I was so marked. I was so tainted. I felt like, I was like, if I start, I don't know if I'll ever end. And I was afraid of that, but surrender does amazing things. And I was just like, let's do it. This woman has taken her time to come and sit with me on a Sunday in Panera. There is a God. Because who would, I just never thought that I even deserved any kind of attention like that. And I did. And so we sat down. My grandfather was the first one on the list. And then everything else that possibly bothered me. People, places, institutions, things. You know, the whole thing. And that was the beginning of my recovery. And I'm just so grateful to that woman for sitting with me. And for a long time, she was my God. because I just couldn't believe that somebody wanted to spend so much time with me and go over my past. And I didn't realize at the time, but I couldn't believe that I was willing, you know? And I was willing to open up and face all of my demons and do it honestly and thoroughly, because any rock unturned, it'll come and bite you in the ass at some point. It's a guaranteed thing. And I was willing to do everything she said to do. So the resentments went down, and then we worked through there, and we worked quickly. And just really quickly, in terms of the step work, I took it very seriously. And that's something that I think has been able to, I've been able to maintain this kind of abstinence for 7.5 years. I take this program very seriously. And something that I heard someone say in those first 2.5 years that I just refused to believe was, an old timer says to me, you need to make this program the most important thing in your life. That's it, absolute. And I just looked at her like, she's nuts. I mean, she's nuts. Like, I can't do that. Are you saying that I'm supposed to put this before my husband, my children, my job? Yes, she said. And I just, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. So years, I was in this program years. I just wasn't willing to do that. But you know what? I do now. My son is homesick with a fever. I called my mother. I got a qualification. You got to help me. I got to get over there. This is you are a priority, because the freedom and the liberation and the life that I've lived in 7.5 years is just, I mean, what God has done for me, trust me, I could have never, ever done for myself, ever. And I will tell you that this is also an important part of me, my program as well, is that I've been in therapy as well, dealing with the abuse, and never really dealt with the sugar piece or the food part. But so it works in conjunction for me, and that's been very effective for me, and that's important to say. And the big book tells you, by all means, any resource out there, go for it. And I've been lucky in that way, and I've had a good doctors, and I have a newfound freedom, and I also have a new sense of respect for myself, and a new self-worth that this program has given to me through working this program. Another important part, so the resentments, the fears, I had more fears than resentments, by the way, but was in the ninth step. When I got to the amends process, which was really a pivotal point for me, and remember, I was still in a place where I was, you know, I wasn't listening. That's the other thing about long-term abstinence. Don't believe everything your mind tells you, I mean, or you're thinking. Just, if it says something, you know, move on. It's just, you know, because my best thinking, everybody, it got me here. That's about all it's done. It's not done more than that. And my thinking causes more problems than, it offers me more problems than solutions. So I know that that's not what I need to rely upon. The truth is that true grace and true and utter contentment comes from something outside of here. It doesn't happen up here, you know. So the ninth step I wanted to tell you about. So I made some pretty heavy amends. My mother, my sister, those were the big ones, my husband. Like, I went right for it. I didn't go to, like, you know, these like random like other things, you know, right to it, as far as these are the main core relationships in my life, you know. And I did some really bad things. And what happened was, a lot of my tendencies was, when the going got tough, I would run. You know, I couldn't face anything. I would run. I was, you know, an isolator. And I hurt my mother in ways that, you know, not to get into specifics, my sister too. And I have to tell you all something that happened. So last night, I went out, my sister, that same sister, I have one sister who, you know, 7.5 years ago, I ate her entire bachelorette cake. She celebrated 40 years yet last night. And we went out to a restaurant. And it was almost, some of the same people were there from 7.5 years ago. And my cousin was there. And she's still 300 pounds. And I sat next to her. And it was a different experience that now, having sat there, I didn't eat a cake. Good news is I didn't eat the cake. And I had a pretty abstinent meal. Sometimes, you know, restaurants are still a little, not good at it, not as clean as when I'm home. It's just the truth for me. But I don't eat out often, and I still thrive to, just do that better. That's just part of my program, you know. But, you know, I found myself there, and I just realized, you know, gosh, where I was 7.5 years ago versus where I am today. Totally different person, you know? And I can look my mother in the eye. I can look her in the eye, and I could stand on my own and not feel ashamed and not feel less than. And it's a sincere relationship that I have that I never experienced before. And that's from the step work. That's from that ninth step, you know? That's from dealing with my demons, you know? My sister too, you know? She was there. My sister, when I made my amends to her, she says, oh, did those people in that cult tell you to come here and tell me what you're supposed to say? Yeah. I mean, she still thinks it's a cult, you know? And that's okay, that's her bit. She doesn't have an eating disorder the way that I do. She had a different experience than I did. And I'm learning to accept my sister, Patricia, as she is. You know, and I sat in front of her, and I sincerely wished her a wonderful birthday, you know? And that's what this place, this is what the power of this program does, you know? And I ate an abstinent meal, and I went home. And that was so different from 7.5 years ago. I mean, and I just look at all this in absolute wonder, and I acknowledge it for what it is. Like, if you work this program, I mean, your life will change dramatically. The book describes it as a psychic change that takes place. It can happen. If you're willing to be honest, and that's, you know, it's not easy. Thorough, everything. I gotta do everything, even if I don't want to, do it anyway, you know? And the other thing is that I believe that I deserve this. I deserve good abstinence, you know? I want it more than anything. I mean, I want abstinence. I want to live in this place, you know? But I have an addiction. I have this addiction that tells me otherwise sometimes, you know? And believe me, after 7.5 years, I still get those food thoughts. They don't go away. I get a reprieve. The book tells us how this all works, you know? But what I do now is very different from what I did before this program. I'm going to give you an example. This is being very honest, and this is what happens. It was about 2.5 weeks ago. I called in my food to my sponsor. It was a normal day. I had nothing really weighing on me, you know, in terms of anything that I needed to let go of. I didn't feel like it anyway. And it was, my job's been very crazy. That I will say about that day, but I had ordered in for my children to have, you know, there was a friend over, and I knew what I was going to eat. I had committed the whole thing, and there was something that I had ordered that wasn't part of my plan, and I decided there was a moment, because this is about these decisions, right? We have these forks in the road, and I must make about 20 decisions a day for recovery. The fork is there. Am I going to do it or am I not? You know. And in this meal, it was getting sloppy. The meal was getting sloppy. And so the food thought came through, and I ate something that I wasn't, you know, wasn't part of the plan. It wasn't anything, it's not on the absolute list. I have an absolute list that says, this is a deal breaker for me. If I go here, I may never come back. And that's what it is, end of story. This food was not on that list, but it's not a clean food either. And so I proceed to eat it. And so that was the first thought. This is what 7.5 years of recovery have given me. The next thought was, no, like out loud, no. And I got a millisecond of time, because that's, I don't, hand to mouth, like, I don't know about anybody else, but it's like, oh my God, what have I done? What's going, you know, like that was the, like those were the thoughts a lot of times. You know, like it just happened so quickly, but not before. And now, so this was going on, and I thought, no. So I stopped. I gave the children what they wanted. I pick up the bowl of what, throw it in the trash, and this time I smash it down. I had to, for some reason, I had to do that. Just done. That's it. We're over with this, okay? The next thought that came through, I'm not going to tell Binet. That's my sponsor. I'm not going to tell her. And because I keep secrets, everybody. I'm my default personality. I'm a good secret keeper. I may not lie, but I keep secrets because it's an element of control that I learned at a young age, and it's part of my default personality is what I call it. And it was the next thought that came through. And 7.5 years of recovery gave me one more second to say no yet again. In fact, I thought to myself, I'm going to tell B'nai. I'm going to share at my meeting about what just happened. I am going to tell everybody. Because if my mind is telling me not to, I am going to do the opposite. And I am not perfect. And some days, my days are not clean. For the most part, by the grace of God, I'm committed and it's all good. But I have those moments. But the way that I react to them is what makes all the difference in my long-term recovery. So I picked up the phone and I said, this is what I did. And she goes, don't worry, I've been there too. I know. Because she knows. You know, we know. And now what? I say to her. Because I'm surrendering again. You tell me what to do. Because if I start listening up here, I'm done. And she, you know, we have a plan. I go into my meeting the next day. Everybody, this is what I did. You know, the more I call my mother, this is what I did. The more people I told, because I have to do that in order to remain honest. And it's the fifth step, you know, tell God and tell somebody else. Because if I keep it up here, it's going to manifest into something bigger and greater. And I deserve recovery. I deserve recovery. And I want it more than anything, more than what was in that bowl that day. And I say that with conviction because I mean it with every sense of my body. And I have an eating disorder, and I have an addiction towards sugar, but I'm many other things. And I need to live the life that God intended me to live. And it doesn't involve all that stuff, you know, and eating all day, and you know, all those things that that this disorder brings. So, Ross told me I have 5 minutes. I think I'm done. Thank you for letting me share, and thank you for coming. Sure. Comments and questions? Yes.